During Robert Brogdon's Olathe Buick GMC clearance event, save up to 20% on new models like the 2023 Buick Encore GX or GMC Sierra 1500. View their huge inventory at robertbrogdon.com and find your perfect match.
Gerritsen and Toth presents The Shift with Jack Johnson on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM and 94.5 FM.
Another day, another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. Shout out to our presenting sponsors, starting with Gerritsen and Toth. They handle the most complex felony, federal, or state criminal defense cases. You'll find they've been doing that successfully, helping criminal defendants all over the Kansas City area and Northeast Kansas for years. Also, a shout-out to Active Family Chiropractic. If you're dealing with any neck, back, shoulder, or any type of pain, go in today and schedule an appointment. Their office is located on 135th and Antioch in Overland Park, Kansas. Or just give them a call at 913-681-6013. That's 913-681-6013. Stop dealing with those nagging pains that keep you up at night and call Active Family Chiropractic today. We did get some more NFL news this morning, and I'm not sure most of you listening are going to like what this news was, but it involves Tom Brady, who, if he couldn't have already gotten enough media coverage since coming back out of retirement, well, this certainly will bring him back into that discussion once again. Because we always knew that when Tom Brady retired, it was not going to be just the end for him with football. I never really saw him as a coach. Though I guess it's up to him, and if he wanted a coaching position, he sure as hell could have gotten one. Hell, if he was to retire next year, he probably could just ask Todd Bowles to be the quarterback's coach or the offensive coordinator. He'd probably be given that job because he has that much pull, that much power, and he's had that power since being in New England. I mean, Tom Brady controlled a lot in New England, not everything, because everything was pretty much run by Bill Belichick and Robert Kraft, as it should have been, being a head coach / GM and the owner. But the quarterback also has the third most pull if you're a Hall of Famer or you're one of the best quarterbacks in the league. You know, Patrick Mahomes has a lot of pull in Kansas City's organization. Tom Brady had it in New England, and he definitely has a lot of power in Tampa Bay. He might have more power than the head coach. He did with Bruce Arians there. In fact, Tom Brady wanted Todd Bowles to be the head coach, and then Bruce Arians stepped down and retired. I'm sure something happened behind the scenes where Tom Brady said, hey, if I'm coming out of retirement, I want Todd Bowles to be the head coach. Now, Bruce Arians says that didn't happen, but is Bruce Arians really going to come out and say, well, Tom Brady forced me to retire? No. But back to the news of today. This is from Adam Schefter's Twitter account, but Lakeland Murdoch announced it. Tom Brady has agreed to join Fox Sports as its lead NFL analyst whenever he decides to stop playing. This is from Fox Sports. Tom will not only call our biggest NFL games with Kevin Burkhardt, but will also serve as an ambassador for us, particularly with respect to client and promotional activities. Now, I saw the deal out there somewhere. It was a 5-year deal. I'm trying to scroll through Twitter at the moment to find that deal. Tom Brady had also tweeted on the hiring, I guess if you can call it a hiring, though it's kind of just a job waiting for him when he's done. He said, excited, but a lot of unfinished business on the field with the Buccaneers. I'm hoping a lot just means 1 year. I'm hoping Tom Brady isn't seeing a lot as playing 2 or 3 more years. But Tom Brady will probably never go away, even when he's done playing, which is why his retirement felt so odd at the time that it came after a season in which they fell short. They lost at home to the eventual Super Bowl champion, LA Rams. But it just didn't feel like Tom Brady, that he's going to retire on a whim like that. You know, right before the Super Bowl, yeah, it got media coverage, and I think that was Tom's idea that though he's not in the Super Bowl, here's some coverage for the Super Bowl. I'm retiring. But then it got leaked. We all remember that. Tom Brady had a couple of leaks come out that he was retiring. Then he denied it, and then he waited till he could announce it, and he finally retired. How long is he retired, Marco? 2 months?
Well, what, he retired Saturday before Super Bowl. Was it the Saturday before
Super
Bowl?
It was Saturday because all the pregame coverage, I would say about 30% of it was Tom Brady retiring.
The leaks came out the Saturday before the AFC, the championship games. Probably two months retired.
Was retired for 2 months. Comes back to the NFL. Buccaneers players start filing back in where Tampa Bay kind of seemed like, well, that's the end of the run. You'll still have weapons. They re-signed Chris Godwin. You have Mike Evans. But it felt like, for the most part, some of those guys were going to go elsewhere because they didn't want to wait around and see who the quarterback in Tampa Bay was going to be. Then Tom Brady came back. Tampa Bay got all of their weapons back, aside from a few missing pieces on their offensive line. Their defense returned. So Tampa Bay, once again, will be a top three team in the NFC. But if this is it, and I'm done speculating whether Tom Brady is coming back or not next year, the year after that, I'm just going to wait. And even if he does retire, I guess maybe this is reason to believe that he is retiring because he's got a mega contract waiting for him with Fox to be the lead NFL analyst. Keep that in mind. Lead NFL analyst for Fox Sports, calling games with Kevin Burkhardt. And, you know, we have seen some really good former quarterbacks and former players walk into the booth and be phenomenal. Usually in the NFL, that's what you get. You get the lead broadcaster, and then you probably get a former player. That's what all the networks have done. You know, on CBS, you have Jim Nantz, lead broadcaster, play-by-play. The color guy is Tony Romo. You know, on Monday Night Football, they've bounced around. You know, Drew Brees was in there for a little bit. I thought Drew Brees was very good. Alex Smith is on the panel before the games and after the games. I think Alex has done a great job. You know, Randy Moss on ESPN is on the panel. You know, Aqib Talib's been calling games. And I think it's because as we're getting later and later into, I don't want to say later, we're only 2 years into the 2020 decade, but they're going to try to filter in more NFL talent that's been playing with the last 10 years because for people like Marco and I, you know, these are players that we watched. And for, I mean, everybody's watched the NFL, so you know who those players are, but it's the way the NFL goes about its business. They don't really care if you have a broadcasting background. They want talent. They want names that'll generate viewing. Get the numbers up. And I think for Fox, once Tom Brady's on that broadcasting crew with Kevin Burkhardt, it'll be the most watched game, at least in year one. You know, most of us, when Tony Romo joined the booth, you might have sighed, you might have rolled your eyes, but I love Tony Romo in the booth. I think Tony Romo's phenomenal. I think he brings a different element to the broadcasting crew. Because I'm not somebody out there that says, oh, well, you have to have broadcasting experience to thrive in this industry. That's not true. I mean, even in the NFL, if you're going to get upset about former players calling games, well, only get upset if they're bad. Like, Jason Witten was terrible. Jason Witten was awful. Great guy, but he was not cut out to be on any sort of broadcasting crew. And that's why Monday Night Football suffered so much. You had Booger McFarlane, you had Jason Witten, and then you had Joe Tessitore. Not many people were happy when those games were on. But also, Monday Night Football takes a back seat now. Monday Night Football isn't that much of a big deal anymore. I'd probably say it goes Sunday Night Football, then Sunday games, then Monday Night Football, then Thursday Night Football. But they've all kind of moved around a little bit now. Where is Al Michaels? Al Michaels is now joining Amazon. So Chris Collinsworth and Al Michaels no longer doing games together. You know, they're going to move around here the next couple of years, but they're going to infuse it with more talent. Honestly, I've seen Tom Brady on social media, and for as much as I dislike playing against Tom Brady, I don't root for Tom Brady. Tom Brady's a pretty funny guy. And if you haven't known that by now, maybe you haven't seen him in a couple of movie cameos on Twitter, on Instagram, on TikTok. Tom Brady's funny. Kind of like with Tony Romo. I think Tony Romo is pretty funny. He's also very knowledgeable, which makes the broadcast entertaining. Now, some of you out there say, well, I hate Tony Romo. I don't like the way Tony Romo calls games. I don't like him calling out the play before it happens. But don't you want to see some insight from a former NFL quarterback? That's why I thought Alex would be great at calling games. Now, Alex Smith is more, I think, better suited for being on that panel discussing breaking down certain games, breaking down certain players. Like, he's cut out for it. Now, Aqib Talib, I never really saw being in the broadcast booth because I feel like he would kind of stick around football as in coaching. maybe be a defensive coordinator, defensive backs coach, something in that area. But I think Aqib Talib is a very interesting watch. He brings a different element, and that's what I think is great for the NFL, is you don't want the same guys. You don't want the same style on every single broadcast. It's why we all tuned into the Manning cast. You wanted the Manning cast on Monday Night Football because it was different, it was unique, they gave you different aspects of the game, and they're two former quarterbacks. Quarterbacks are always, by far and away, going to get the first call. And Tom Brady is going to be the most famous quarterback, in my eyes, that's going to take the broadcast booth. In my lifetime, absolutely. Like when it, what did we say, probably 5 years from now, I don't know if many corporations, you know, anybody like CBS, like Fox, like ESPN, NFL Network, I don't think they're going to be calling Aaron Rodgers because of Aaron Rodgers' reputation around the NFL. Kind of abrasive. I think he'd be interesting. I'd still watch it because I think when you get to see a former player call games, you're interested. You know the name. You want to see how they are at it. They're breaking down plays. Tony Romo was nowhere near the quarterback that Tom Brady is. But it doesn't make him any less knowledgeable than when he's reading defenses. And Tom Brady, for all we know, Tom Brady could suck at this. But clearly Fox doesn't think so because they're giving him a 5-year deal. And I'm sure that when Tom Brady's on the call for Tampa Bay games, I can just see him picking apart whoever that quarterback is. Whoever the next quarterback in Tampa Bay is, they better hope every time they're on television, it's not Tom Brady calling their games. Just kind of like with Dallas, when I didn't think Tony Romo does call any Dallas games. He had to have. Well, when was the last time Dallas was even on CBS? I wish we could get a list of how many times Tony Romo's called a Cowboys game. I can't think it's more than one.
I think he called the last game Alex Smith played against Dallas when they were down in Arlington where Tyreek Hill had the touchdown going into halftime.
That was the last time he called a Cowboys
no,
game?
No. I'm just thinking of from a Chiefs game.
Oh, off the top
last
of your
time
head?
He
man.
Was, I'm, I think
now
he was
I remember
calling that.
That
one.
But Dallas won that game, yeah. So there was not much criticism there. But in terms of Tom Brady, I mean, it's a great move for Fox. I mean, that's definitely going to get their viewership to go up. Not that you already are not watching Fox. I mean, let's be honest. We're all NFL fans here. On Sundays, and this is why I can't wait for the fall again. On Sundays, you probably, if you can, you set up two TVs. You have CBS on or Fox on, and you have NFL Red Zone. For me, usually if the Chiefs are around 3:05 or the Sunday night game, I just have one TV up. Now, I'm not saying, like, I have this bachelor pad of multiple TVs. No, they're these little tiny TVs that I set up, and I hook up a Roku, or I hook up my PlayStation, and then I go through the app. But that's what it's about, is if there's a game on Fox, right, and it's Tom Brady calling the game, let's say 2 years from now, and CBS has the Jaguars and the Texans playing, well, I think everybody's going to be tuned into Fox, because nobody gives two blanks about the Jags and the Texans playing. And even if Tom Brady's calling a game where it's pick a team, the Carolina Panthers and, I don't know, the New York Jets, you know, just something like that. I mean, if Tom Brady's calling the game, people are going to go see it or listen to it. And that's why it's a great move by Fox. I mean, going into the NFL season, Marco, Kevin Burkhardt, I think, is pretty good on the call. I believe he actually is the play-by-play guy on Madden now, or at least he was in Madden 20.
Yeah, him and Charles Davis had done it for a while, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, he's a popular name, but I would say compared to the other guys around the league, I think Jim Nantz and Tony Romo are more popular. I think, obviously, Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth are more popular, but now that when you're moving it around, Kevin Burkhardt gets to get paired with Tom Brady whenever Tom Brady's done. This is a home run situation for Kevin Burkhardt. Because even Fox, I mean, the Chiefs sometimes play on Fox. And I think that'll even be another interesting element because Tom Brady would have played Patrick Mahomes. Let's see, this will be the fourth time in Patrick Mahomes' career that Tom Brady and Mahomes will play this year. I believe that's the case. No, it's the fifth. And Mahomes is 1-3, I want to say. Am I right on that? Won in Foxborough once, lost in the AFC Championship game, lost in Foxborough the first time they played, lost in the Super Bowl. Oh, no, this will be the sixth time. He's 2-3.
Yeah, because they won down in Tampa.
Yes, they won down in Tampa, but lost later that year in the Super Bowl. So that'll be interesting to see Tom Brady break down Patrick Mahomes and maybe get some stories about when they're on the field together. And that's why NFL broadcast booths, they go for former players. Because guess what they can bring to the table? Former stories. Players they played against. They can break down games in which, you know, playoff games, Super Bowls, decisions they made, coaching gaffes. And I don't think Tom Brady will shy away from saying certain things. That's why I think Aaron Rodgers would be great for the booth, because I think he'd just go crazy on saying things that happened in Green Bay. I mean, he's not shy to voicing his frustration even now. He voiced his frustration all offseason last year and through the regular season, only to sign the largest contract in NFL history. Had the COVID problem, feuded with the front office, and even now. Did you see that interview on, I think it was with Pat McAfee? They asked him, why did he sign that deal? And he said, well, I signed that deal because I had the inclination that Devontae Adams was returning, and then they traded him away. He said, if I would have known that would have happened, maybe things would have been differently. It was a while back. It was about, I want to say, a couple weeks, if not a month ago. But Aaron Rodgers basically went out and said that he signed the deal thinking that Devontae Adams was going to sign another deal with Green Bay so he'd have his number one wide receiver. But see, those are the type of things that broadcasting companies, they're going to look at and say, that'll get us ratings. Because during an NFL game, you don't want to hear the same boring stuff over and over and over again, which is why Monday Night Football, I mean, credit to Joe Tessitore, because I think Joe Tessitore is a really good broadcaster, but there's a reason that Joe Tessitore and Jason Witten didn't work out, because Jason Witten was boring. He didn't give anything interesting. Booger McFarland in year one with the Monday Night Football crew didn't give anything interesting. It just was a goofy charade. You know, Booger's up there on that big chair that's blocking 40 people in the stadium, and they turn it to him to say something that we already knew about the game. You know, if you're watching the Chiefs play the Bengals and Patrick Mahomes is 6 for his first 13, you know, they turn it to Booger to say something like, oh, well, it's clear that Patrick Mahomes is off his game right now. Not much is being completed. Therefore, I think his mechanics might be a little bit rusty. Well, yeah, that's an obvious thing that we're all watching happen. But when you get somebody like Tony Romo or maybe Tom Brady in the booth, or if they took a wild shot in the dark even with Aaron Rodgers, they can break it down, number one, because they were great quarterbacks. You know, when you get guys that are headed for the Hall of Fame, like a Tom Brady, like an Aaron Rodgers, they can give you some insight because they've also struggled from time to time in their career. They know what it's like. For Jason Witten in the booth to criticize a quarterback, I mean, what does he know about quarterbacking in the NFL? You know, for as much as I don't like Tom Brady on the field, I think this will be a great, great occupation for him after football. And it also locks in the fact that when he retires second time around, he's not coming back. He's got $20 to $25 million per year waiting for him on a 5-year deal with Fox. That's perfect for Tom Brady. He doesn't have to coach. He will be the face of Fox broadcasting. I really do believe that. And he's going to get all the big-time games. And for Tom Brady to get that, I mean, it's fitting, number one. It feels like everything is usually, I mean, if you're a critic or you're anti-Tom Brady, you feel like Tom Brady's been handed everything, handed the keys to a Ferrari in Tampa Bay when they went out and got him all these weapons. In New England for years, he always had great weapons, a great defense, a great coach. Well, no, I don't believe that. As much as I don't like Tom Brady, I'm not on that boat of Tom Brady was handed everything, because it's the same people that criticized Patrick Mahomes for being handed everything. And what we don't always understand is great quarterbacks, they make great situations. They make coaches look better. They make receivers look better. They make tight ends look better, running backs. They make, at times, defenses play a little bit more laxed because they know that the offense can put up 40-plus on any given Sunday. But for Tom Brady, hopefully, going into his last year in the NFL, he's got a great gig waiting for him. And I, for one, am somebody that is kind of excited for it because I always like new talent. in the broadcasting industry. I like seeing former players. I like seeing Aqib Talib because I've seen Aqib Talib on multiple podcasts. He's a great interview. He's interesting. And I think Tom Brady will be very interesting. And Drew Brees, you know, I think Drew Brees was great. He's great at calling games. He's great at breaking down things. He's been the most interesting guy, but I'll take that as well. If you're a super knowledgeable person about the game, about what's going on, people tune in and they take what you say seriously. Alex Smith, another guy, super high football IQ, an interesting interview. I think also has great and knowledgeable takes, but he may not give the most entertaining broadcast, which is probably what they consider on ESPN, is that, you know, Alex is great for our panel, but maybe he's not great for the broadcast booth. And there are guys that you may not like, you don't think fit. I mean, not every single broadcasting pair is universally loved, right? Even on Sunday Night Football, you know, you love Al Michaels, you may not like Chris Collinsworth. That just happens. You know, when Dan Fouts was with Ian Eagle, some of you liked Ian Eagle, hated Dan Fouts. Some of you liked Dan Fouts, hated Ian Eagle. There's nobody that's universally loved. You just usually have a favorite pair that when you're on the, or you're watching your team on the broadcast, you say, well, I hope it's so-and-so today. For me, I always hope that it's Jim Nantz and Tony Romo. Or, I'm in the minority here, I actually like Joe Buck and Troy Aikman games. And though Joe Buck gets a lot of hate, you cannot deny he's great at calling games. It's why MLB hires him. It's why the NFL hires him. He'll go from calling He went from one time during COVID, he called an MLB postseason game and then turned around and called an NFL game the next day. There's a reason why they do that, because Joe Buck is good at his job. Now, Troy Aikman, you know, even Josh Briscoe, different feelings towards Troy Aikman, but I have no problem with him. There's very few guys I'm just like, well, geez, now we got to listen to them for 3 hours.
I'll take Collinsworth over Aikman any day, honestly.
I've never had an issue with Chris Collinsworth either.
Yeah.
I think he says some, I mean, he's got some cliche sayings, but so does every single NFL broadcaster. I would say my least favorite, that when they are calling the games for the Chiefs, it's probably Ian Eagle and Charles Davis. Is it Charles Davis?
Yeah, Charles Davis, yeah.
They're fine, but they're not like a very exciting watch.
Yeah, they're not like Harlan and Green. That's why they're the number three team over there at CBS. But still, that's still a hell of a number three duo to go to.
Oh man, if you get Kevin Harlan on the call, I mean, it's ridiculous. I can't believe I didn't even mention Kevin Harlan and Trent Green. But those are guys that when you see them call your game, because they always come out with the broadcasting pair, what, a couple days before Sunday.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, you know. And I think there's nobody I've really been like, I want to listen to it on mute. No. Because I think for the most part, everybody in the NFL has great calls. They're all fluid. I mean, when you watch college football or college basketball, you're watching on ESPN+, you get some very questionable broadcasters at times where you're going, that call sucked. I mean, it made no sense. What are we doing? I mean, you just look through Twitter and people are blowing up about college sports, because college sports is not just going to get the A team on every single game. Right, if you're on ESPN Plus or Big 12 Now and you're watching KU or K-State play, there's going to be some times where you do not get the A team.
Yeah.
You get the C-minus team, and it shows. In the NFL, they don't afford to do that. They replenish every single year with more talent. Sideline reporters, guys in the booth, an extra analyst. But Tom Brady's going to be the lead analyst. And I think that's kind of showing that, either maybe in an interview or just meeting Tom face-to-face. I mean, you don't just give that job to somebody because, hey, they're Tom Brady, right? They have to have some experience, but this is Fox. I mean, Fox could easily find somebody that is better than Tom Brady, but they probably feel Tom Brady has a future in this industry because of his charisma, you know, maybe his chemistry with Kevin Burkhardt. And we'll see how good it is, but I honestly think it's just a home run hire. Is it not? I mean, I've been rambling on and on. I'm usually not going to root for Tom Brady. I'm kind of rooting for Tom Brady in this situation.
No, absolutely. I think it's great that they're going to be getting the guy, the GOAT, in the booth. But also, I'm really curious to listen to him as a broadcaster and his analysis of the game, because What does ESPN Plus have? Well, they have the was it Inside the Mind of an Athlete or something like that, where they do where Peyton Manning does sit downs and breaks down film. Kobe Bryant, before he passed away, had his episodes of breaking down film. We're now going to get that with Tom Brady, but instead it's going to be in a live action game each week during the football season, prime time. So I'm really excited because he's the athlete whose mind I want to pick. Because, remember, he's not the most athletic guy, even in his prime. What he did so well was being able to beat defenses in the most annoying way possible. He wasn't out toughing them. He wasn't out muscling you by any means. He was beating you straight up with his mentality, with just the raw basics of what makes of what a quarterback uses in their play. So he's somebody that and this goes with all quarterbacks, I feel like, in the booth, what makes them the most why I understand why networks go after them is because they understand the game from the offensive standpoint, but also the defensive standpoint, because they got to be able to read those defenses also. And who better to do that than Tom Brady?
I still think, in terms of quarterbacks in the booth reading defenses, nothing Tom Brady will ever do will top. And it just pains me to go back and watch that game. In that final drive in overtime, 2019 AFC Championship game between Kansas City and New England, and already after Kansas City's defense had struggled to stop Tom Brady all night, Tony Romo just calling out exactly what was going to happen, who Tom Brady was going to throw to, how many yards out, what route the wide receiver was running or Gronk was running, and they just picked apart Kansas City all the way down the field. I guarantee... Now, I'm not in the front office in Kansas City. I'm not in the locker room. I'm not behind the scenes. I guarantee somebody watched that. And that might have been the deciding factor in firing Bob Sutton that year. Because if Tony Romo, now it's a different angle, right? He's watching from up high.
Yeah.
So he gets to see everything.
He's got his monitor in front of him.
It wasn't Bob Sutton down up in the press box?
Was he calling games? No, I think he was on the sidelines at the
time. I don't
know. I got to go back and look at
that. I'd have to go back and look. I remember there was a change that happened that year. I think Bob was on the sideline at one point, and then he wasn't. But that's why defensive coordinators sit up high, so they can see what's happening. Mm-hmm. And if Tony Romo on the booth over is calling what's happening, and you can't see it, I think they've realized that, well, man, Tony Romo might as well be our defensive coordinator if he can point all that out. Which is also another thing I've always considered. Why are not more quarterbacks defensive coordinators? I feel like I could be saying something really stupid
here.
They
read
defenses. They know what's happening.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like at some point somebody's going to take the gamble, take the risk.
That's not a bad analysis there. That's a you make a good point with that one, because who better to understand the defense than the quarterback on the offensive side of the football, at least.
Now, a smart quarterback at that, like Tony Romo still had, I don't know how many career interceptions. So he wasn't just brilliant all the time. So it would have to be somebody that was just kind of like a Tom Brady.
Yeah.
Imagine reading NFL defenses. Maybe a Patrick Mahomes, though. He said, in the Super Bowl year that he was just learning how to really read NFL defenses. So maybe not Mahomes either. But grand scheme of things here, love the move for Fox, hiring Tom Brady whenever he's done with football to a five-year contract worth $20 to $25 million per year. When we come back here on The Shift, we'll talk about some of the NFL scheduling leaks and an overview of the Chiefs' opponents going into this regular season. You're listening to The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. Welcome back into The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. I have two interesting tidbits before we get into this NFL scheduling about Major League Baseball. So some historic news tonight, and this just shocks me. I don't know how this is possible. Now, I know American League and National League teams don't always play together. But tonight, the Baltimore Orioles, who the Royals just saw in Baltimore, will play their first game against the St. Louis Cardinals at New Busch Stadium, a venue that is now 16 years old. They are quite obviously the last team to visit. This is from Jeff Jones at JM Jones on Twitter. How is that possible? What am I blanking on here? That can't be right. I mean, it is right. But I feel like everybody rotates, correct? So this year, the American League Central has the NL West. Okay, next year they will get the NL East, I believe.
Yeah, because they played the Central last year.
Last year. So they just rotate. It'll go NL West, mm-hmm. NL Central, or NL East, NL Central. How is it that Baltimore has not played St. Louis? Oh, that's why.
Oh.
Because you play one series.
Yeah.
I believe you play one series, don't you?
Yeah. The Royals only played the Pirates and Reds once.
Last year.
Last year, yeah.
Okay, so actually, it was at Kauffman Stadium, wasn't it? For Pittsburgh. So
Pittsburgh,
Baltimore,
yeah.
Then, the last time they played St. Louis, mm-hmm. would have been in Baltimore. Is that stretch out over 16 years, though? I mean, my goodness. That is wild. Busch Stadium is not brand new by any means. Many stadiums have been built after Busch Stadium. Now, it's not as old as something like Wrigley Field or Fenway Park. But Busch Stadium is no spring chicken type of stadium. That's the second time I've used spring chicken this week.
So the Cardinals and Orioles have only played each other a combined... Since 2000, they've only played each other a combined 12 times.
Since 2000. And Busch Stadium was created in 06?
God, when did that construct? Let's see. New Busch Stadium constructed in 2006, yes.
So they've played 12 times since 2000. So majority of those times would have been before 2006.
So they played each other three times in 2003, and then they didn't even play each other until 2011.
Wow.
So I don't even know why they didn't play each other.
To be something up about that. But the number's right. They have not played at New Busch Stadium. There was some game... I want to say, probably 10 years ago. It was like the first time the Yankees and the Cubs had played in multiple years. It was like groundbreaking because it was on Sunday Night Baseball, I remember. And I think it was like the Yankees playing the Cubs at Wrigley Field.
And it was a night. Yeah.
It was a night game. And it was a big
deal. I think Soriano was still playing.
Gosh, it might have been. Yeah, I think Alfonso Soriano, like Derek Lee and Zambrano were still on the Cubs. That old Cubs team. Who else would have been there? Ramos Ramirez. But yeah, there was a big deal about that. But this feels like a big deal. It's just sad that it's the Baltimore Orioles. And I have no right to criticize the Orioles because they just thumped Kansas City over the weekend. But you think things are going pretty bad for the Royals? You want to know how bad things are in Detroit right now? A team that legitimately went out and spent a lot of money this offseason? They're 8-20.
Ooh.
Okay, they're in last place in the American League Central behind the Royals, who feel like they can do no right at this point. The Royals are 9-17. The Tigers are 8-20.
It could be worse.
It could, well, as in the words of Buddy Bell, never tell me it can't get worse. I believe that was the exact quote. But the Tigers have not scored a run in their last 24 innings. They were shut out once again last night by the Oakland Athletics, a team that has just completely given up on trying to win games. Though it's weird with Oakland. I never understand it. And maybe if the Royals do make some organizational changes, they got to pluck some people from the Oakland A's organization. Not saying everybody in Oakland's organization is good, but Oakland has nearly nobody, and they still have a better record than the Detroit Tigers. They're 11-18, so not good by any means. I don't want anybody with the ownership group or a lot of people in the front office, but they always seem to find talent somewhere. I mean, the A's have won 11 games with a lineup. Tell me, Marco, how many guys you know in this lineup.
Okay.
Tony Kemp.
I've heard of him, yeah.
Okay. Do you know Sheldon I think it's Noose.
No.
I know I'm getting it. It's N-E-U-S-E. I know his name. He played. He was a prospect for a long time, I believe, in the Yankees organization. Ramon Laureano.
No, nah.
I know him pretty.
I was going to say, I can see the name
on
a jersey.
He's a center fielder that had that throw, that ridiculous throw to first base when he was at the warning track in Anaheim. That he became famous from that.
Okay.
He ran down a ball on the warning track in left center field and threw a no-hop throw to first base to double up somebody from the warning track. It was like a Bo Jackson-type throw.
Nice.
So Laureano, Sean Murphy.
Okay, yep. Sean Murphy, yep.
Hits cleanup and catches. Seth Brown.
I would be lying to you if I said yes. Okay. Although that... There's probably been a baseball player with that name before.
Chad Pinder.
No.
Designated hitter.
Okay.
Then you have Kevin Smith.
No. Wow.
He is their shortstop.
Okay.
This one you will know, Elvis Andrews.
Wow, still playing.
Still playing, and he's the shortstop.
Okay.
So I was wrong. It was, who did I say? It was Kevin Smith is the third baseman, not the shortstop. And then they have Luis Barrera.
Hmm. Is this the Tigers or the
Reds? This is
Reds.
The A's.
Oh, the A's.
The A's. Who have actively, I mean, they didn't even try to do anything this offseason.
Nope.
They just traded away everybody.
They're too focused on switching cities right now.
And I guarantee you, the Oakland A's are going to win more games than the Kansas City Royals and the Detroit Tigers. Not combined, just overall. I bet the A's win like 75 games with that lineup. And that's why somebody needs to pluck somebody from Oakland's scouting department,
yeah,
because there's no way this lineup should be better than like the Cincinnati Reds. There's no way.
Or right there neck and neck right now with the Rangers.
I mean, Paul Blackburn, who's pitched in Oakland for years, threw 6 2/3 last night, only 4 hits allowed, no earned runs. ERA down to 1.74.
Oakland, can I interest you in a trade for Blackburn? I don't know.
Yeah, Paul Blackburn.
Any pitcher that could go six innings, I'm willing to trade. I'm willing to trade a prospect.
They also got, how about this find? And this is just somebody in the scouting department, Danny Jimenez. Okay, he's 28 years old.
Yeah,
he had thrown 1 year of professional baseball. Coming into this year, he has career an inning and a third pitched. He is 28 years old. Oakland picked him up. He hadn't pitched, by the way, since the COVID year. He didn't pitch last year. He is not allowed to run in 12 innings, has 14 strikeouts, and got the save last night. He has 5 saves in his last 15 outings. Or 15 games, that is.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody needs to wake up and find Oakland scouting. I know they made a movie about him, Moneyball, Billy Bean. Now, Billy Bean's no longer there. But yeah, on the baseball topic, I mean, if you're the Royals, they, for me, the Royals, they have no problem finding talent. They can't mold it into productive talent at the big league level. I mean, if they got a guy like Danny Jimenez would not be good. I mean, the probably the most discouraging thing that's happened this year for the Royals is that Jake Junis, a guy they just non-tendered, goes over to San Francisco. And I knew when the Giants picked him up with Jake Junis' slider, I said he's going to be a stud for them. He's in the rotation. He's been a stud. Because you know what the Giants do? The Giants take pitchers and they say, tell me what you throw. And a pitcher will go, oh, I throw a fastball, I throw a changeup, I throw a slider, I throw a curveball, I throw a sinker. They say, stop doing that. Focus on three. Perfect those three pitches, and you'll be a top-end starter and make a hell of a lot of money when you hit free agency. They did that to Kevin Gausman, excuse me, was awful in Atlanta, came over to San Francisco, damn near won the Cy Young Award. Was ridiculous. In fact, now that I think about it, He might have won it
last year.
Yes, I know Robbie Ray won it for Toronto.
It wasn't Wood on the Giants.
No, I mean he was good too. Alex Wood was good,
yeah.
But everybody they find. San Francisco has the best scouting department, the best front office of anybody in baseball. It's not even close. Not even close. They get talent. They get guys that failed elsewhere and turn them into studs. Mike Yastrzemski was a nobody before he got to San Francisco. Has been great. They get guys like Lamonte Wade, DFA'd by the Twins. You pick him up, and then he was a guy that hit nearly 20 home runs. I mean, the Giants just know how to do that, and it's tough to find people like that. But, yeah, in baseball, I mean, guys like front office people in Oakland that can find somewhere with the talent when the ownership is just saying, well, trade away everybody. We're not giving you the money, which is why A's fans are boycotting this season, basically. But they go out and find talent. That's what the Royals need to do when they pluck talent from elsewhere. Go to those organizations. because they can find failed projects elsewhere. The Royals have tried to go out and get failed projects elsewhere, but it doesn't always work out the way we think. I mean, guys like Brad Boxberger still pitching that was in Kansas City for a cup of coffee. He was there for like 20 innings, was terrible. Went to Miami, was great. Jake Junis, Jorge Lopez, we just saw him in Baltimore. He's closing out games for Baltimore, and he's been great. The Royals never could fix him. Jake Junis never could fix him. They go 1 year in another organization, immediately fixed. Jorge Soler was broken at the tail end of his career in Kansas City. Phenomenal in Atlanta. Got a contract, a 3-year, $30 million contract in Miami. Still crushing 450-foot home runs.
Was batting leadoff in a World Series?
I just can't even. It's so baffling to me that this always happens. I mean, I'm not saying it's going to, but don't you just have that feeling that the Royals let Adalberto Mondesi walk, he'll just somehow unlock his potential somewhere else? It's approach at the plate. The Royals never preach getting on base. They preach contact. They preach don't strike out. And when you do that, it limits home runs. You have no, your slugging percentages are all hanging around 400.
Yeah, it's kind of a mixed message telling someone to focus on contact, but also don't strike out.
And you know what the misconception is with the 2014 and 15 Royals? I guess more so the 15 Royals that won the World Series. We all think going back that this Royals were this scrappy bunch, that, oh, they just put the ball in play, they singled teams to death. No, that was more 2014. They stole bases, mm-hmm. had a great bullpen. No, there was like seven guys in that lineup, that on-base percentage was north of like 360.
Yeah.
But no, they were a very good team. They weren't this scrappy bunch, and that's sometimes what I think the front office tries to confuse you with or mislead you that, well, our philosophy is the same as it was in 15. It's put the ball in play, it's great defense, it's run the bases well, and it's a good bullpen. No, you need a lot of talent in the lineup to compete, not only back then, but in today's age. And what is today's age proven in baseball? You got to have power. Every team in baseball, with the exclusion of the Royals, values power. They value strikeouts. I was talking with Shane Dennis the other day on ESPN Wichita about getting a lot of pitchers that pitch to contact. Right, and the Royals have no strikeout pitchers in the rotation. Not one. Not saying all of them are doing bad. Zach Greinke and Brad Keller and Daniel Lynch have been pretty good. I think Daniel Lynch is probably the closest thing they have to a strikeout pitcher. And he maybe strikes out 5 or 6 a game, mm-hmm. if he's really on his game. The problem is, if you don't have a strikeout pitcher, there are certain situations when you pitch to contact that it doesn't work. For example, second and third, one out. What do you need there? A pop-up or a strikeout? Strikeout pitchers get that. Pitch to contact guys, they'll get you a ground ball, they'll get you a fly ball, but it'll be a sac fly. The Royals have no strikeout guys. They don't value it. They just say, hey, an out is an out. And I agree with that to some extent. You know, if Brad Keller's rolling and he has 2 strikeouts in the 7th inning, as long as he's got a shutout going, it doesn't matter. But in situations like yesterday, when things unraveled in the 5th inning with Baltimore, it's because Carlos Hernandez is not a strikeout pitcher. He has no put-away pitch. So when you get guys down 1-2, 2-2, and you need a strikeout, they still can't get it done. And we've talked about this, and we've seen that the Royals, I think, probably give up the most foul balls. And you don't think it's a big thing. Like the Yankee series, my Lord, I think the Yankees went through about 400 foul balls. That's not like this, well, geez, they're great at the plate. No, it's because the Royals can't strike anybody out. They don't value it. It's an out is an out. Not the case. You need guys that can blow it by them. The 2015 Royals, they had it with a couple of guys. And in their bullpen, they had it with a couple of guys. They're not throwing strikes. They're not getting guys out. Not throwing a bunch of effective pitches. Pitching to contact doesn't work. But as I mentioned at the beginning of this segment, we were supposed to talk about NFL scheduling. We'll get to that after a quick break. But with the Royals, things can be worse. You could be the Tigers right now, not scoring in the last 24 innings. We know how bad the Royals' offense has been. But man, sometimes it just frustrates you that other teams out there that are struggling, they're still finding talent somewhere. Their scouting department and valuing the important parts about baseball. And I think for the Royals right now, they're kind of stuck in an old school philosophy. And that's not going to change their production unless they wipe away that philosophy of just don't strike out, put the ball in play, see what happens. Because if you just put the ball in play and it's an out, it's the same thing as striking out. It's an out. When we come back here on The Shift, we will switch back into some NFL, and I will break the news of the NFL schedule leaks that happened earlier this morning and last night. You are listening to The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. into the Shift on 94.5 FM, 1510 AM, ESPN Kansas City. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. So I did promise some NFL scheduling talks, and we know this was going to happen, right? The leaks are always going to be coming out, and don't know why, really, because I'd just rather it be maybe earlier in the week. Just release it on like a Monday or Tuesday. We don't need to wait till Thursday. I don't know why the NFL decides to do that, but they just continue to leak scheduled games throughout this entire week. And we got another one that came out this morning, earlier this morning, around 7 a.m. And we got a Christmas Day game between the Denver Broncos and the Super Bowl champion L.A. Rams. Looks like in L.A. They'll kick off at 3:30 Eastern time. You can catch that on CBS or, get this, Nickelodeon. Are you a fan of the Nickelodeon broadcast, Marco?
I am. I do enjoy it.
Tell me why.
I think Nate Burleson is fun and entertaining.
I do love Nate Burleson. He's great on Good Morning Football as well.
Yeah, yeah. And then Ian Eagle's son, I think his name's Noah, could be wrong on that one. He's very fun, too. They do a really good job of keeping it kid-friendly is not the right phrase, but they do a good job of adapting to the audience.
Now, with the international games, and I'm curious your thoughts on this as well, I would say the biggest shock that I had was that Tampa Bay and the Kansas City Chiefs were not scheduled to play in Munich, Germany. I thought that was by far and away going to be the favorite, like the lock-in.
Yeah.
That, and it would have helped the Chiefs because they're scheduled to play in Tampa this year. That would have taken away a road game. But that would have not... Wouldn't that have been the best way to introduce football to Germany over there?
It would have, but I get why they didn't do it, and that's because of the time difference and its effect on that it would have on ratings. That's more of a let's play that game here in America in prime time where we know we can generate as big of an audience as they can. So that part of it made sense when I'd seen that about it.
Where would you think? I'm kind of peppering with questions now, but if you think the NFL needs to add one more location, or two, pick as many as you want, and they need to introduce the NFL, because honestly, for Germany, I think it'll be cool to see, but I still don't think it's like a fit where you have a wild fan base of NFL fans in Germany. I mean, it's going to be sold out.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting, but I don't know. I feel like there are much better options out there. I don't know where. Maybe Australia? Because of rugby?
Yeah, possibly. Don't know if they would ever go back and play in Canada with CFL already up there. Football's already a thing. But, yeah, Australia, that would make the most sense. I'm thinking Japan, but I don't think so. I think that's too big of a time difference, and I just think they're more – I don't think that audience would be appeal to the NFL and football. They're more of a baseball and basketball.
Yeah. And I don't think you would go anywhere. I don't think, Japan, I don't think it makes sense over
there
either.
New Zealand, I guess.
New Zealand would be another one. They're pretty big in rugby. Yeah. Anywhere in the Caribbean, I don't think Caribbean they would care as much. It'd be tough to play a game over there as well.
Absolutely,
number one,
yeah.
Travel, but then number two, it'd be 95 degrees.
Where are you going to play? Also, it's...
Yeah, I don't think there's any... It'd be a soccer stadium, would it not? Are there any soccer stadiums?
I guess so, but not
big enough.
Yeah, nothing would seat like where they're playing at in Germany.
Yeah, but I just think that's – I'm trying to get, at the moment, the full schedule leak because I have the international games on here. We know the Christmas Day game is between L.A. and the Broncos.
We know Packers and Giants are going to be in London.
Yes. Seahawks and Bucks are the ones
Seahawks
in
and
Germany.
Bucks. Ooh, man, Seahawks and Bucks. Ooh.
Who's the Mexico game? And then this is why – this is stupid on Twitter, is you just type in NFL schedule leaks. They're not even popping up. It's just a bunch of memes. I can't find any of the Mexico City games. I saw this morning. I should have bookmarked it. But I think for the most part, maybe this will do it for me. It's a link, a Pro Football Network. This should be good. Okay, I got it. Yeah. I got it now. Finally, somebody steps up before we get to Fact or Fiction. Vikings and Saints in London. Mm-hmm. That'll be October 2nd at 8:30 a.m. Eastern time on NFL Network. As you pointed out, Giants and Packers in London. That'll be October 9th the next week, again at 8:30 a.m. Eastern time on NFL Network. Broncos and Jags in London. That'll be October 30th, the day before Halloween, wow, at 8:30 a.m. Eastern Time on ESPN Plus. Why, I don't know. Seahawks in Tampa Bay in Munich, Germany, November 13th, week 10 at 8:30 a.m. Eastern Time on NFL Network. And then here's the Mexico City game, 49ers and Cardinals, week 11, November 21st, at 7:15 p.m. Eastern Time on NFL Network. And then also some Thursday night football announcements. As we know, the Chiefs and the Chargers will play on September 15th. That'll be the home opener at Arrowhead. And then the Monday night doubleheader, that'll be the Titans and the Bills in Buffalo at 6:15 p.m. Eastern Time on September 19th. And they'll be preceding the Vikings and the Eagles, which will kick off at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time on September 19th. So that's the full schedule leak so far. And we will get the entire Chiefs schedule and the rest of the NFL, for that matter, on Thursday. Now it is time for some fact or fiction. Five questions, five takes, in well under 5 minutes. Marco, fire away.
Jack, Tom Brady retires after this year.
I'm done speculating. I said I'm not going to go after Tom Brady and predicting when he's going to retire.
Yeah.
Because it's going to happen when it happens. Now he's got a spot that he can land at. Oh, man. I'm going to go fiction. If he doesn't win it again, he's probably going to come back because he's probably better suited to play even next year as well. He's in good shape, but he does just have a great job waiting for him when he is done.
Fact or fiction, Tampa Bay reaches the Super Bowl this year.
Fiction on that. I think the NFC is probably going to be represented by either L.A. again,
mm-hmm,
or, man, gosh, Tampa Bay is going to be up there as well. I'm going to say L.A. gets back to it because they just have a great roster.
Fact or fiction, Brady Singer starts on Wednesday.
Yeah, I believe J.J. Piccolo said earlier today that Brady Singer is expected to join the rotation soon, so I think fact. That's not really a shock, though, because he was always going to be the next man up when either Bubic or Hernandez was gone.
Fact or fiction, the Tigers finish with 100 losses.
I'm going to go fiction on that. They got enough talent on that they're not going to finish with 100 losses. I don't think anybody in the American League Central finishes with 100 losses, but they'll finish fourth or fifth this year.
And lastly, fact or fiction, the Chiefs and Bucks game will be on Sunday Night Football.
Yeah, if it's not going to be in the international game, then why not put it on Sunday Night Football? That'll be a great final rematch, maybe, between Mahomes and Tom Brady. But I'm going to go fact on that. I think it's the perfect opportunity in Tampa Bay, a rematch of the Super Bowl between Mahomes and Brady. There's Ray Charles, so it is time to go. That wraps up another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I've been your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. We'll be back tomorrow at 10 AM. You take it easy, Kansas City.